From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Magia Street.
Berkeley.
Hercules, California.
Bubble Park City College.
South San Francisco.
Downtown.
ATL.
Pittsburgh.
P-World.
Okay.
Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, we'll go inside the U.S. immigration bureaucracy.
You can miss your chances by a computer not choosing your name. It's something that really doesn't make any sense.
Then what happens when three dozen comedians take the stage in Golden Gate Park?
George Carlin had this great line. He says, you know, I love people except when they get into groups of two or more.
And we'll sing the praises of California's official state song.
It is sort of an old-fashioned song. But after all, this is history, and it's okay if it's old-fashioned.
I love you, California. You're the greatest state of all. That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Today, Congress reconvened after summer recess. Immigration advocates had hoped that the comprehensive bill the Senate passed back in June would be up for discussion. But with the debate over a possible strike on Syria and the debt ceiling rearing its head again, they're worried immigration reform will get buried. Here in California, the State Assembly recently passed a resolution urging Congress and the President to pass immigration reform, including changing the regulations for H-1B visas. Those are employer-sponsored visas for highly skilled foreign workers, often in science and technology. Earlier this year, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services had an unexpectedly high number of H-1B applicants. But rather than reviewing each of the 124,000 applications individually, and for context, the cap is 85,000, they resorted to a computer-generated lottery to pick who could stay in the country. State Senate Republican leader Bob Huff, the author of the California resolution, says this kind of thing discourages job creation and innovation.
A broken immigration process takes 10 years to complete and is literally driving U.S. educated talent elsewhere to immigrant-friendly nations.
The fate of millions of people depends on what happens to immigration reform legislation. This week, we're hearing the stories of some recent immigrants interviewed by KALW's Eva Sonsan. Today, we'll meet an engineer from Egypt who applied for one of those visas.
I'm Mahmoud Kafagi. I live in San Francisco. I'm from Egypt, from Cairo, born and raised there. I've done my bachelor's degree over there in engineering and then worked there for 5 years in engineering as well. In Vodafone. And after this, I decided to move to the U.S. or actually study in the U.S. and then maybe have some work experience over here. So I applied for the MBA and I got the application was good and I was accepted. When applying for a student visa is different. And I'm usually used to this in Egypt because of the paperwork we have for everything we want to apply, let's say for a driver's license or a passport or something. It takes a lot of red tape and a lot of time, so I'm usually ready with all the papers that they want, but I have to prove that I'm going back home and I have something that's tying me to the country. So the simple question in the embassy is, what are you planning to do after your school? So you just say, I'm planning to go back home. But as a matter of fact, I don't think that this is something very rational, as it's just an interview for 2 minutes with the consulate, and it's easy to get a student visa, to be honest, as the thing is, you come here as a student, you pay tuition and you pay for all the expenses, rent and all the other expenses. So you're going to spend some money, you're investing in it. And it's not just you're moving here and that's it. When people graduate, you have a year of a work visa and you can work whatever, not whatever you want, but something related to the education that you had. And within this year, you only have 3 months of unemployment. If you were unemployed for more than 3 months, then you should leave the country. Within this year, your company should apply for your H-1B. I graduated last year, August 2012. I had to find a job within 3 months. Or other than that, I have to leave the country, basically. Like the clock was ticking and every day counts. I have to do a lot of networking to find something. And like it happens, you do all you can't. You try networking, you try applying online, you try to talk to your friends. Maybe they find you something. It was very frustrating. I have applied literally for 100 jobs, like 100. I have all of these applications documented. And you have to have a good resume for each job, and it has to be tailored for it so that you can be considered for something, as well as a cover letter, and maybe you send an email to the recruiter or try to call them and something like that. And out of these 100 applications, I got 2 phone calls. The funny thing about it, I told you I applied for almost 100 jobs, and I didn't apply for this job. Seriously. They wanted someone with exactly the same experience that I did, and they called me out of the blue. They found my profile on LinkedIn, and then they called me and they told me, there is this job, are you interested? And I was actually running that day when I had this phone call, and I found the number, and I was really surprised. It wasn't a very long process to get the job compared to the other companies. Like, there is a lot of nonsense that's there, especially the quota thing, the lottery, that you did all you can. Like, you did all your homework. You came here, you got the student visa, you paid for the master's, you found a good job, your company applied for the visa, and you can miss your chances by a computer not choosing your name. It's something that really doesn't make any sense. You're not even evaluated based on your qualifications or how well you do at your job or work experience, something like this. It's just your number, it wasn't chosen. Of course, I'm planning to go to Egypt at some point. Depends on the situation back there, and depends as well on the experience that I have here. Like, if I went there without experience, I'm not adding much value. Yeah, like, I'm over here, I'm paying taxes as if I'm an American. I didn't have any benefits from the U.S. so far. So I would say, I got education, but I paid for it. So everything I pay for, I get for it. So this is a kind of relationship that goes between me and the U.S.
That's Egyptian engineer Mahmoud Kafagi speaking in a piece produced by KALW's Eva Sansan. It's part of a series we're airing this week on Cross Currents, and if you have a compelling story about immigration, your own or someone else's, you can tell it to us by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. We'll turn now from immigration to comedy. Bear with me here. The two actually have quite a history together in the Bay Area. Here's a little story. Back in 1980, when comedian Jose Simon heard that the San Francisco Chronicle agreed to sponsor a free event he founded called Comedy Day in Golden Gate Park, he told the editors that it was the second happiest day of his life. One of the editors asked what the happiest day was, and Simon replied, "The day my brother Juanito joined the Border Patrol." This weekend, you can catch more than 40 comedians doing their thing in Golden Gate Park for the 33rd annual Comedy Day. It's a free event this Sunday from noon to 5. Debbie Durst runs the show, and she's been part of each one of them from the start. She joined comedians Diane Amos and Marga Gomez in studio with KALW's Ben Trefney to talk about Comedy Day. He started with a question for Marga.
So it says on your website that you are high energy, proudly Latina, openly gay, slightly dorky, and tragically sexy. Wow. Tell me about one aspect of yourself.
Which was the Latina? Was I proud Latina or was I tragic Latina? Or
slightly Latina?
Slightly Latina?
No, it's proudly.
Proudly Latina.
Proudly slightly Latina. Dorky.
I'm I represent not just Latinos, but a certain minority of Latinos who can't speak Spanish. So that's my community. There's 5 of us. Can't speak Spanish, can't dance salsa, but still I try to keep the stereotype alive of Latinos are the best lovers in the world. Yeah. It's a fetish, but it's gotten me places. It's gotten me places. I have great sexual confidence, you know. Not with Latinos, but anyone who's not.
Anybody who's heard that about Latinos.
Here I am, you lucky you. Have you ever been with a Latina before? Yeah, I mean, that's what I love about, I grew up in New York, but I left New York by the request of New Yorkers because I was too slow. I was creating a bottleneck. So I live in Noe Valley now. That's kind of where I went. I don't know, it's sort of a, people are very spiritual, but they're wealthy. It's yuppie Tibet. And I love the mix of cultures here in San Francisco. I mean, some of the cultures are being pushed out, of course, but what I found when I, you know, was living here in the 80s was just great. You know, it wasn't about being gay or straight. It was about if you're a top or a bottom, and I think that's what people really need to focus on.
Do we need to bleep that part?
By the time you do, it'll be out in the air.
Straight or tops and bottoms, too. Yeah. So don't worry about it.
I can't believe innuendo.
Yeah. All right, well, that's Margot Gomez, and she's going to be part of the 33rd Annual Comedy Day in Golden Gate Park on Sunday, September 15th from noon to 5 p.m. And she's going to be part of it as well as Debbie Durst and Diane Amos. And Diane Amos, you have actually raised kids in San Francisco.
Oh, yes.
Well, something that, you know, has helped you live here is your affinity for cleaning products.
Oh, yes.
Segue.
I think for that, you know, we actually have a clip.
Oh, do you?
I'd love to play because a lot of people might actually know you from the television.
This is true.
Now, don't they look beautiful all lined up together like this, all sparkly and bright? But with so many wonderful scents, do you ever find yourself asking, how do I choose from all these powerful varieties of Pine Sol? Well, you don't have to choose at all. I use Lavender Clean in my bathroom, my sanctuary, the one with the big tub and the door that locks. Now, Lemon Fresh, I use right here in the kitchen because I make a mean garlic burger, but it doesn't have to smell like that 24/7. Sparkling Wave, the kids' bathroom. Yeah. Outdoor Fresh, I use this one on my gorgeous hardwood floors. Garden Fresh, out on the patio. I love bringing those scents inside. Now, Original Pine Sol, I save for the tough, greasy stains, like the kind my man brings in when he's tinkering in the garage. He's good with his hands. As a matter of fact, I think I'll have him build me a cabinet with glass doors all backlit so I can line these beauties up and their jewel tones can bounce off my cheekbones just so. Okay, that's just me. You can use Pine Sol any way that you want. That is the power of Pine Sol, baby.
Wow. Now, that's actually a spot. That's on the internet. It's not actually on a commercial, but yeah.
Well, do you have to bleep that? Because I heard some sexy talk in there.
People with good hands and everything.
Well, I want to know, Diane, how do you really feel about Pine Sol?
Are you serious? I love that stuff. You want a coupon? I'll give you a coupon before I leave. You and the technicians. No, it's one of those products. Seriously, I mean, my grandma, if she knew that I was a Pine Sol, she'd be like, oh, baby, you did good. That's all Sherry is, you know, it's Pine Sol. So it's got a big history, real big history in the Black community for sure, Black and brown community, absolutely, that, you know, they basically feel like they look at me on TV and they believe that I mop. I'm sure that's the key to my success. They believe, oh, that woman be cleaning something. This is my 20-year anniversary. So,
nice. Hey. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We're proud of you. And it's like so much fun, like hanging out with Diane when she gets recognized.
Yeah.
Other times it's not that much fun, but only when she gets.
Well, Debbie, if you could sell a product, if you could be the, you know, the person for a product for 20 years, what do you think that would be?
People off. People go away.
People go away spray.
Yes.
Okay. How to make that
like
a spray.
Mace.
Yeah, kind of like that, yeah. Because, you know, me and people, not really. George Carlin had this great line. He says, you know, I love people except when they get into groups of two or more.
Okay. Despite that, you are the person who runs Comedy Day, which brings all these people together.
Yes, yes. Well,
are you a sadomasochist?
Well, I derive joy seeing the joy of others. Mm-hmm. It is just a big hassle to put everything together. But then you see, it's like my family, you know. Everybody's together for one day in broad daylight, and they're almost awake, and they're drinking beer and doing what comics should do. And it's just a nice, big, fun day for people to come and hang out.
That's Debbie Durst talking about this year's Free Comedy Day. It's happening this Sunday starting at noon at Sharon Meadow in Golden Gate Park. You also heard from two of the 40-plus comedians who will be there, Margot Gomez and Diane Amos. They spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. You can find everything you need to know about Comedy Day at kalw.org.
This is Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Comedy Day is celebrating its 33rd year in San Francisco. And today there's another anniversary to mark, the 163rd birthday of the date California became a state in 1850. We actually have music that's a perfect fit for the occasion, the California State Song. And if you know anyone who went to school in the Golden State before the 1960s, they can probably still sing part of it because that's how some schools used to start each day. This little ditty had an interesting journey, and it changed the marketing of music along the way. KALW's Stephen Short has our story.
I love you, California. You're the greatest state of all.
Maybe you've seen the TV ad we're hearing now. It shows an SUV driving through iconic California landscapes. The commercial identifies the state flower and state tree, but it just assumes that everyone recognizes this music as an official California state song. Maybe they just thought everybody already knew that. And that would be true if we returned to the mid-20th century or before. And speaking of returning, let's go back even further than that, to 1913.
1913 was the year in which this piece was written by two gentlemen from Los Angeles, Silverwood and Frankenstein.
James M. Keller knows a lot about music history.
This is James Keller, and I'm the program annotator of the San Francisco Symphony and of the New York Philharmonic.
Silverwood and Frankenstein, those two gentlemen from Los Angeles, were active in the Shriners, a fraternal group whose members are known for wearing red fezes and funding children's hospitals. Anyway, their national convention was coming up in Dallas.
And they were going to perform this song as a salute to all of the Shriners in California and to remind the National Shriners of the great time they had had the year before at their convention in California.
And that would have been the end of it, except
for the fact that somebody shortly thereafter got a copy into the hands of Mary Garden. Now, Mary Garden, not a household name today, but in 1913, 14, 15, in those periods, she was a real celebrity. She was the Madonna of her day, or the Lady Gaga of her day, even.
Remember now, this was in the era of sheet music. Recordings were rare, so we can't hear the Lady Gaga of her day singing I Love You, California. But here's a sample of how opera star Mary Garden sounded from a cylinder recording. Just as now, fans not only wanted to hear their favorite stars, they wanted to be like them. So Mary Garden was highly sought after for product endorsements.
And that seems to be what happened with this song. Somebody gave it to her, asked her to endorse it. She actually wrote a letter to the composer and the lyricist saying how much she loved this song. I'm so glad I was the first person to be able to sing this song.
Well, the first person after those Shriners in Dallas, that is.
And she made it famous. And in fact, the ensuing editions of the song no longer have the pictures of the Shriners on it, but rather they have pictures of Mary Garden in a very vampish position. It was designated both the official song of the Panama Pacific International Exposition in San Francisco and of the exposition that took place at the same time in San Diego, the Panama California Exposition. So this was being sung all through the state a great deal.
Most states today have official songs. In fact, according to Keller, there's only one that doesn't, New Jersey. California didn't start the process of selecting a state song until 1951, and then that process stalled.
According to the law, when it was finalized into final form as state song, it was termed an official song because there were other candidates, and there was some spirited discussion, apparently, in the halls of government about which one ought to be selected.
Saying an official song rather than the official song leaves the option for others to be recognized without having to rewrite the law. Curiously enough, though, the legislature didn't get around to finalizing this designation for over 30 years.
In 1988, finally, it seemed it was time to cross the T's and dot the I's. And there was, at that time, Assemblyman Tim Leslie, who took this on as his personal mission.
Former Assemblyman Tim Leslie of Carmichael says it was to honor his mentor, Assemblyman Frank Lanterman.
Lanterman was a real musician, played the theater organ in the early days when they had silent movies. And he had a great appreciation for I Love You, California. He felt that it captured the beauty and grandeur of our state.
Leslie says Lanterman also had a great revulsion for the better-known song, California, Here I Come.
California, here I come, right back where I started from, where bowers of flowers bloom in the spring. Each morning at dawning, birdies sing, and everything, a sun, yes, miss.
I Love You, California was a sheet music hit when it came out three generations earlier, but California, Here I Come from 1924 had more staying power because it was still known through singer Al Jolson's record. Warner Brothers used the song in some cartoons, and it was featured in an episode of I Love Lucy in the early 1950s, around the time of these state song debates. None of this endeared the tune to Lanterman.
He said that was a Tin Pan Alley hit, talking about being outside of California trying to get to California. I Love You, California is a description of the state and its beauty. I was criticized for introducing a bill with such little substance, but for me, it was a tribute to a great gentleman and a fine state legislator.
Leslie's bill moved I Love You, California from being a resolution to being a statute. That gives it more authority. But remember where we are, Sacramento. There had to be people opposed to this measure, and there were.
I remember in particular my colleague and fellow Republican Ross Johnson didn't really care for I Love You, California. It is a sort of an old-fashioned song. But after all, this is history, and it's okay if it's old-fashioned. But at the committee hearing, he brought in a boombox and played California, Here I Come, and some other songs, trying to discourage people from voting for my resolution.
California, California, coming home.
Where the California girls are really the most.
A recorded song has its merits and its limitations. That's why Leslie took another approach.
In the State Assembly, when we presented the bill on the floor, knowing that it was somewhat controversial, I invited the American River College chorus to come and sing the song, and they did from the gallery. And it was a beautiful job. They just sang it perfectly, and I think that's probably what won over enough votes that the measure passed.
Another victory for live music. But there's one more piece to this story, so we need to go back in time again, but only to a couple of minutes ago. Keller said that in 1988...
Finally, it seemed it was time to cross the T's and dot the I's.
And here's the reason he said that.
Because that was the moment when the copyright expired on this piece. And as I understand it, that's why it happened, why it was able to happen in this official form when it did.
What a nice confluence of events, though, that Tim Leslie, who was wanting to honor his mentor as a former assemblyman, was also willing to back this at that same time that it became available.
Absolutely. And the State Assembly made him work for it.
How so?
Well, They made him show off why he felt that it should be the state song, and they required him to stand up in the chambers of the assembly and give a solo performance of I Love You, California.
You know, I can't remember if that happened or not. It's very likely that at some point along the line I did sing it, and luckily that didn't kill the bill.
Well, I'm going to ask Tim Leslie to sing it right now, a little bit of it anyway. Would you do that?
You bet. I love your winter. I love you in the winter, summer, spring, and in the fall. I love your fertile valleys, your dear mountains I adore. I love your grand old ocean, and I love her rugged shore. I love your old gray missions, love your vineyards stretching far. I love you, California, with your golden gate ajar. I love your purple sunsets, love your kiss, skies of azure blue. I love you, California, I just can't help loving you.
The assembly passed the measure 46 to 30. Governor George Dukmejian signed it into law on September 21st, 1988, and it remains California's designated state song, whether or not anybody knows it. In California, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
Happy California State Day.
I'm gonna go back out on the coast, where the California girls are really the most. They walk that walk, they talk that talk, they twist like this, they shimmy, don't you hear me? Yes, I'm there having fun in the warm California sun. The girls are frisky and old Frisco.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. I'm Holly Kernan.
A pretty little miss wherever you go.
Last Thursday, due to technical difficulties, the last 5 minutes of Cross Currents sounded sort of like this. We're really sorry about that, especially because it meant we didn't get to play the answer to last week's audiograph mystery sound for you. So we're going to play it for you right now.
When you hear me holler out, heave, you pull really hard, and what do you say?
Oh.
That was terrible. Heave!
Oh.
There you go. We'll get a lot of work done that way.
Many of you knew exactly what and who that was.
I know that was Alice Watts.
I think it was Alice Watts.
That is Alice Watts on the Alma at Hyde Street Pier.
I can identify the sound. It's my wife,
Alice Watts.
Who was calling the commands for people to haul on the lines.
Alice Watts is the first mate on the Alma, a historic flat-bottom boat called a scow schooner that set sail from San Francisco's Maritime Park to help people understand what it was like to work on the bay. Watts has been teaching people how to sail the boat for 20 years.
I came here as a parent chaperone, and I never left. And I'm having a great time. I love being on board. It's my life.
KLW's Julie Kane climbed aboard the Alma to learn why being out on the water can help us have a better understanding of where we live.
Would you introduce yourself to me? Just tell me your first and last name. And
oh, Charter is the first name, and the last name's Kays, K-A-Y-S.
And do you work on this boat, or what's your...
I'm the lead shipwright at the Maritime Museum, or we call it the Maritime Park now. I think maritime education is important because the city of San Francisco and this whole area was really built by maritime trade. When gold, you know, was found at near Sutter's Mill and all the rest of that, you had all these immigrants coming from around the world to California, you know, and then the major port at that time was San Francisco and the San Francisco Bay Area. Well, people would come to San Francisco to get outfitted to go up to the gold fields, and you had immigrants from around the world. Everybody was coming here looking to make a buck, okay? the people who were really making the money were the merchants who were in the cities, the merchants in the Sacramento area and whatnot and everything. I think they were selling all sorts of goods and supplies to the miners and then all the related trades that were involved. So the city, developed as kind of a working man's town. You had saddle makers, and you had blacksmiths, and you had shipsmiths. Those are blacksmiths that specialize in making iron parts and stuff like that for ships. Tool makers. You had chandlers, ship chandlers that sell supplies to the ships and stuff like that. You had boat builders and ship builders. You had it. The city was full of trades. There's a tremendous, phenomenal amount of history here in California that, if you go at it full bore all the time, you can't even make a dent in it. And here in the Bay Area, you've got all this kind of history coming together. The Old West, it meets up with the maritime trade, the Cape Horn trade, the days of 49, the whole thing is phenomenal.
A lot of you got last week's sound right, including First Mate Alice Watt's husband, Bob. But we can only have one winner. So congratulations, Crystal Ip. You're the winner this week, and we're going to send you a KLW t-shirt. For everybody else, we have a new mystery sound this week, and we're going to give you some extra time to figure this one out. You have until next Monday, September 16th, to tell us what this is and where we recorded it. Here's a sneak peek.
Ding!
Down on the yard.
Cookies on the tier, cookies.
$1 all on the line. $1 all on the line.
Strip down.
Ting, 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 ting.
Second tier, chow time.
5 minutes of lock up.
Ding. Ding.
Not quite sure what that was? Stay tuned to KALW to hear it again or check out Audiograph at our website, kalw.org. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KLW News. Our team includes Hana Baba, Julie Kane, Jen Chien, Lila Day, Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Judy Silber, Nina Gensler-Debs, Liz Mack, Mary Reese, Daphne Matsuyaraki, Seth Samuel, and Daniel Moore. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to you, KALW is independent, listener-supported, homegrown public radio. This voice, but not the name. It's Monica Pasquale, part of the all-female group Blame Sally. The band played in Berkeley last month, but you can hear Monica Pasquale on her own tomorrow. She's part of a songwriter-in-residence program at the Bazaar Cafe in San Francisco, hosted by Bernal Heights musician Nina Jo Smith. Music begins at 7 p.m. For more information or to hear more local music, go to our website, kalw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to the Cross Currents podcast. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.